Wisconsin. And so we have now gone a long way to restoring access to safe and legal abortion in Wisconsin.
Judge Diane Schlipping says Wisconsin's law enacted in 1849 bans infanticide, not abortion. The ruling is expected to be appealed. People younger than 18 seeking gender-affirming care in Wisconsin will keep getting it. Governor Evers vetoed on Wednesday a ban passed by the legislature this fall. Most major medical associations say gender-affirming care is evidence-based and saves lives. Evers says he'll veto any bill he considers anti-LGBTQ. I'm Nate Ruggiehout, Civic Media News.
Badgers volleyball ready for the Sweet 16. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Wisconsin women's volleyball team resumes the NCAA tournament tomorrow. The Badgers ranked number 2 overall against number 5th ranked Penn State as the regionals in Madison continue at the Fieldhouse. Game time 6 o'clock. College hoops. The Badgers go on the road last night. They beat Michigan State 70-57. After the game, Spartans head coach Tom Izzo says he'll take the blame for this one.
We are not tough enough right now, and that's all me. I'm going to get it fixed, so blame me, not the players.
NBA, the Bucks headed to Vegas for the next round of the in-season tournament. Milwaukee will play the Pacers in an early one, 4 p.m. Central Time. Last night, the Bucks dusted the Knicks, 146-122. Head coach Adrian Griffin.
You know, after the game, Giannis was the first one to talk about, you know, our mindset going into Vegas. The first you got to win against a very good Indiana team.
That's Adrian Griffin with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Lows level off around 23 tonight under partly cloudy skies. Winds out of the south around 5 miles per hour. Sunny skies and calm tomorrow. Highs around 46. Partly cloudy skies tomorrow night. Lows dip down to about 32. 1 to 2 inches of snow Saturday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley. Right now, 36.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. Rice Lake's choice for news, talk, and sports. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
This is the Empowered Caregiver Show. If you are a caregiver or know someone who is, this show is meant to uplift you through education and support, while also lifting up every caregiver's invaluable role in society. Now, here is the Empowered Caregiver and your host, Liza Helen Brand.
You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Helen Brand. And today I have two wonderful guests with me, Dr. Brittany Lamb, emergency medicine physician and founder of Brittany Lamb, MD. Brittany has used her years of experience in the emergency room setting to create programming and support services that help dementia caregivers make confident medical decisions for their loved one. I also will be speaking with Allison Ronnie with Solfego. I was practicing over and over before the show started, probably still messed it up. Solfego Care Consultation and End of Life Doula Services. Allison provides end of life doula services where she honors her clients' wishes and provides comfort and guidance during some of the most challenging times. And I have to admit, I did not know that there was end-of-life doulas out there, so I am really excited to learn more about this. You're listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I would like to start out by introducing Dr. Brittany Lamb, emergency medicine physician. So, Brittany, working in the ER seems like an intense and stressful job. What made you want to take on the side business of supporting caregivers?
Yeah, so it's not a surprise. I talk about this quite openly that I don't foresee myself staying in the ER until I hit retirement age. I think most ER doctors have an exit plan, whether that's just saving up money so that they can leave early. But for me, I saw this problem over and over in the emergency department. People who are aging And then there are decision makers, family members usually stepping in to have to all of a sudden be their advocate, be their voice when they're not able to speak for themselves. And it oftentimes feels like people don't have a plan. They don't know what to say, what to do. They're not ready. They're not prepared. And for people who are living with dementia, no one wants to be diagnosed with a disease causing dementia. But one of the things about it is that we can look into the person's future. And we do know that it's expected that they will lose the ability to make their own medical decisions. So I thought, well, why don't I just teach their decision makers how to plan for the big decisions that they're likely going to have to make from a medical standpoint. So it's less stressful.
You know, and that's so wonderful. I read that on your website and you're like, yeah, once you know the disease, you kind of know what goes along with it and what one can expect. But if you're living it for the first time, you probably don't. You know, it's all new and you don't know what you don't know. And I know it's your goal to help people make confident decisions. What does the caregiver need to do or understand to be able to make confident medical decisions?
Yeah, there's several things that I recommend that people do. And one of them is really checking into what your person's values of quality of life versus length of life are. And that's something we all really should be talking to our family members about. So for most of us, our goals when it comes to healthcare are to live and to live with good quality of life. But a lot of people do value quality of life more as they're aging. And when conditions, physical limitations, diseases like diseases causing dementia are affecting someone's quality of life on a day-to-day, they tend to start to value that more. A lot of people hold that as a strong value. And so actually defining what that means to the person so that we can make medical decisions based off that. Because we look at how someone has been living. Have they been living with what they would say is good quality of life? And with whatever medical situation is going on, is it likely that they're going to get that quality of life back with the different treatment options? And so people can learn that ahead of time. The other big thing that's important to do is actually take inventory of the person's medical problems. Because when you actually look at what somebody has been treated for and has been diagnosed with and things that we're managing now, things that we've managed in the past, it helps you see into the future. And then that gives you a window of an idea of the decisions that you're going to have to make. And it's, I think we ask people to do things like advance directives and get your affairs in order, but we don't teach people about the actual treatment decisions that they're likely going to have to face. And so that's gathering the medical history and really looking at all of that helps set you up for really learning about treatments and becoming informed from that standpoint.
That's true. You're not really taught those things. I'm trying to think where you would go to get that information, and it's really up to you to seek it and to find it out. You're listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am speaking to emergency medicine physician Brittany Lamb and founder of Brittany Lamb MD. You mentioned on your website various medical forms that caregivers should familiarize themselves with. Could you just give me an overview of what some of those forms are and how they differ from each other?
Yeah, so there's advanced directives, advanced healthcare directives, which tend to fall under the legal umbrella. So these are documents that tell us who a person would want to make their medical decisions. And it gets a little bit confusing because every state has its own language. But basically, you look for documents that say who someone wants to speak on their behalf when they're no longer able to make their own medical decisions. And then there's also documents like living will, five wishes, it might say advanced healthcare directive, advanced directive, that actually talk about someone's treatment preferences. Okay, so what kind of care they would or would not want. That stuff, people have to have the ability to make their own decisions. They still have to have what we call capacity to make decisions in order to do those documents. You have to do them for yourself. No one can do them on your behalf. Then there are medical order forms like the do not resuscitate form, the do not intubate form, and the pulsed form, okay? And pulsed has different names in different states as well, but basically those are forms that are signed with a medical professional and they directly turn someone's goals and preferences toward treatment into an order that can be followed by medical professionals, including paramedics. So 911 first responders can respond to medical order forms. They can interpret them and act upon them, but they cannot do that for advanced directives. So those are kind of the highlights of the forms that people should be aware of.
Well, I'm glad that they're in place, but even just hearing about them slightly sounds overwhelming. Where does one go if they want to educate themselves on these forms?
Yeah, there's all kinds of services and educational resources if you Google these things. I do write about them on my blog, and my blog is all geared towards dementia decision makers. But if you go to blammd.com/blog, I have an article about issues that I have with the living will, like practical issues with it, and also with the do not resuscitate. And there's a lot of information in there about like what these forms do and do not do. What I want to stress to people is that the documents are tools, but they're not actually a plan. So in order to really have a plan for the decisions that you're going to have to make, you really have to look at the person's medical history and think about them as an individual. But you need to read the documents that you have access to. Other ways to get help are with estate planning attorneys, elder law attorneys. They help draft some of the legal documents. And then you can go to your person's doctor and say, look, I want to learn more about the do not resuscitate, the do not intubate, and the POLST form. And I will say that POLST is not widespread in use in all states in the United States. There are some states that have a very robust program and they use it, and then other states that do not. So
what does it mean? What, I'm just curious, the Paul.
Yeah, so it used to stand for something and now it doesn't. Oh. So we changed it. But physician orders for life-sustaining treatment. And I think part of why they changed it is, you know, now we have a lot of nurse practitioners and PAs that are also able to sign these forms. So saying physician isn't necessarily the truth, but orders for life-sustaining treatment is what physician orders for life-sustaining treatment is what it used to stand for. And now the national program of POLST, which there is one national form, that they're just using the word POLST now. They don't want us to use an acronym.
Okay. So. How do you spell it?
POLST.
Okay. All right.
And it has a website. You can read about it on the website. Yeah.
Sounds good. I will put that on my to-do list. You know what? I am going to ask you a question. I said I was going to ask you questions that you could just answer in your sleep, everything that you know. And I thought of a trick question for you. And okay. That is, I'm curious. So the state of Wisconsin is one of five states that have not implemented the CARE Act. And the CARE Act, and I think that's another one that goes by different names in different states, really it has three goals. It is to identify the caregiver, to make sure that the caregiver... I'm thinking now what the number of them are. But basically what it is it's for the hospitals to identify the caregiver, notify them of upcoming discharge. That was the other mm-hmm. one. And then make sure that they have the understanding and I'll say understanding. Some states, I think, expanded on that. Understanding and like linking them to resources. But all we were asking in the state of Wisconsin as we're advocating for this is that the caregivers have an understanding about the care needed for their loved one once they leave, so they feel like they can be confident to take on that role. And so in our state, the Hospital Association says, heck no, not doing it. Well, what they're saying is that we're already doing it. You don't need to kind of regulate us further by putting this into law. So I'm just curious if this is all new to you, or in the emergency room setting, do you identify the caregiver and make sure that they understand what they need to do really when they leave?
So I wish I could tell you yes, but no. I mean, so that I think what and I need to learn more about this, but hospital discharge is a little bit different than leaving the emergency department.
Sure.
So when you have an inpatient stay there, it's a little bit different than when you're in the ER. But no, I don't think that there is a coordinated effort from emergency departments to make sure that the caregiver has what they need. I think it's going to be very dependent upon the ER that you're receiving care in.
Yeah.
So we have very good social workers where I work, and they help with all of that stuff. But
that's wonderful. And I'm sure that many, many of them are great in doing what they should and can do. And there's a few that need improvement. But you're listening to The Empower Caregiver. I'm your host, Liza Hellenbrand. And when we come back, we're going to learn more about how we can proactively be prepared to support our loved ones in the medical setting so that we can ensure the best care and honor our loved ones' wishes. Easier said than done.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Latrell spent more than 8 years in foster care. His world changed when he was adopted at 15 with help from the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption.
I think about how much we love him, and I wish we could have had him for his entire childhood.
The foundation is changing the lives of thousands of teens waiting in foster care. You can help. Learn more at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
One in four Americans today are living with a disability. I'm one of them. People with disabilities are extremely talented, resilient problem solvers that have so much to offer. And we've got a trusted ally on our side, an organization we can rely on, Easter Seals. Easter Seals is leading the way to full equity, inclusion, and access to healthcare, employment, and education for people with disabilities, families, and communities. That's my Easter Seals. Make it yours.
Learn more and get involved at EasterSeals.com.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. Today, I have two wonderful guests with me, Dr. Brittany Lamb, emergency medicine physician and founder of Brittany Lamb, MD. And then coming up shortly, I will be talking with end-of-life doula, Allison Ronning. So with me right now is Brittany Lamb, founder of Brittany Lamb, MD, which supports caregivers in being prepared to take care of their aging loved ones with a focus on caring on those with dementia. You know, Brittany, you could probably speak to just this for the whole hour, but how is caring for someone with dementia different?
Oh, gosh. It's very different because there's so many issues with communication and processing. I think there's so much that we kind of take for granted about what our brains actually are doing for us on a day-to-day, safety issues, and making medical decisions and being in the healthcare setting. A lot of the things that we do to people, they're uncomfortable and it's not, you know, it doesn't feel good, but we're doing them for a reason. A person living with dementia may struggle to understand that. Mm-hmm. And so it can really be hard to provide them care. And it requires a lot more patience, and that's something that's often lacking in hospitals. And so there's a lot of advocacy that is needed, unfortunately, for people living with dementia that comes from their families, you know. And so it's much more complicated. It's much more complicated to make medical decisions and to provide care, especially after someone has really lost capacity to make decisions and then also to communicate like they normally would have.
I can totally understand that. And, you know, I haven't yet been in the position where I'm caring or supporting elderly parents. I have two sets of parents, so mom, dad, stepmom, stepdad. So I'm sure I'm going to be getting a lot of that experience down the road. But my personal journey is I have a son with autism. So that's what led me to the Empowered Caregiver. And as you were saying, explaining some of that cognitive decline, it just made me think about when he was a little kiddo and I would go to take his haircut or get his haircut, and mm-hmm. he would just scream because he would think, I think what he was thinking is that we were taking off parts of his body. You know what I mean? So I can see how that can be really scary and confusing when, you know, you're in the state of mind that these things just aren't always making sense. So, well, I'm 100% on board that being a proactive and prepared caregiver is key. But one thing that I think a lot of people struggle with is how to start this conversation with your loved ones. How can you, or can you speak to that?
Yeah. So one, I do have an article about this, on my blog. When I talk about goals of care, that's kind of the conversation that needs to happen, but goals of care and planning. So you can go to my blog, blammd.com/blog, and scroll down and you'll find an article on that. But the Conversation Project is another good resource. From my perspective, it does matter if the person still has the ability to make medical decisions and have the ability to weigh in on a conversation like this. If a person can't do that, you still have to do this work on their behalf, kind of determining what quality of life means and determining their values. But if you're trying to go to an aging parent or someone that you care about who you're going to be speaking for, it really depends on your relationship with them. You can be direct with them and say, hey, look, I'm going to be the person that's stepping in to make decisions for you. I want to make sure I do what you would want. I don't want to live with a regret or a mistake, like for the rest of my life, that I did something that you wouldn't have wanted. Like, it's going to fall on me. You can also blame doctors and say, hey, look, I was listening to this ER doctor who said that, you know, it's really important to talk about quality of life and to start thinking about these things, because it's a matter of when. We are all going to have situations in which we cannot speak for ourselves and cannot make our medical decisions. It's just a fact of life. So I think sometimes being direct and telling people that, you know, you don't want to make a mistake and that it's going to fall on you, you know, maybe guilting them a little bit.
I can do all of that, Brittany. I can do all of that. I can guilt. I can be direct. I can be rude. I can be crude. No, I don't think that part's necessary, but having the conversations definitely are. And so you actually, if I'm understanding this correctly, created a whole program that you can purchase on your website, blammd.com, to support caregivers. Can you tell me a little bit more about that program?
Yeah, so I basically walk people start to finish what this role is, what the job entails, and give people the support and tell people about all the different services that they're going to need along the journey. Because I basically teach like what happens to a person from a medical standpoint when they're living with dementia, the medical issues that happen, the different treatment options that go along with what the goals of care are. And I teach you how to define what your person's goals of care are now and into the future. And then it's also about, I also teach what happens to people from a medical standpoint as they're aging, because people living with dementia oftentimes live for a decade or more, and they're going to have medical emergencies and need for unplanned care, just like everybody else, issues with the heart, having appendicitis. I had a client who had appendicitis. People have the flu. People have pneumonia. They're just the normal things that happen to all of us as we age, but it's more challenging in dementia. So I explain how it could be and help people figure out treatment options.
So is the course, I thought if I read it correctly, it's something that you can do at your own pace.
Yeah. So it goes out, it does get delivered to you over 8 weeks, because I try not to fire hose people. Sure. So it has a process. But after the 8 weeks, you have lifetime access to it. So if something came up, because often it does, you can pause and then go back to it. So the way I envision it is the way it works is you actually create a decision plan based on your person's individual risk for the decisions that you're going to be most likely to have to make. That's one benefit of it. But another thing is that it's actually access to a doctor explaining all of these medical problems, where you can pause and rewind and go back.
So let me ask you this. Is it something that I need to do as the caregiver, or is it a course that I can buy for my parents and say, do this, please?
So the way that it's set up is for the decision makers of people living with dementia. I have had people that have somehow met me in my local community who have purchased it to use for their aging parents, because I do teach like medical issues in general, but it is designed for someone who is speaking on behalf of a person living with dementia. Every single video in the course talks about how this is different in dementia. Could you use it to plan for yourself or an aging parent? Yes, you could. But that's not the intention of it. So I don't want to give any false pretexts that that it would help with everybody.
All right, fair enough. Your website had a ton of great resources on it. So I want to encourage everyone to go there. Let people know one last time, Brittany, how they can find you.
Yeah, I would just recommend that you go to blammd.com. And if you want a freebie, if you go to blammd.com/3mistakes, you can get a guide for avoiding the top 3 mistakes as a decision maker for your person living with dementia.
Wonderful. Well, I will make sure to post that on my Facebook page. And when we come back next, I'll be talking with Allison Ronning, end of life doula.
Listening to the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
This is a special report from ABC News, UNLV shooting. I'm Daria Albinger. This is not a drill. That's what University of Nevada, Las Vegas students were told today as authorities moved in on an active shooting. By the time it was over, 4 people were dead, including the gunman. ABC's Will Carr has details.
Deadly gunfire erupting just before noon. Reports of an active shooter on the campus of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. A swarm of tactical officers racing to the student union and the business school. At least 3 people killed. School officials urging students to run, hide, fight. One witness telling us the gunfire was shaking the walls. Police rushing hundreds of students to safety while urging those on campus to wait for an all clear.
FBI and ATF agents are now on campus assisting in the investigation. The University of Nevada system is closing all campuses in the southern part of the state for the remainder of the day out of an abundance of caution. This is ABC News.
Your hometown radio refreshed. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin's fake Republican electors are admitting Joe Biden won the presidency in 2020. It's part of a civil lawsuit settlement announced Wednesday. The fake electors also agree not to serve on the Electoral College in 2024. It's the first time any fake electors from anywhere in the country are admitting to wrongdoing. Governor Evers signed 48 bills into law on Wednesday. Included in those bills are a slate of changes to voting ahead of next year's election. One of those bills changes the deadlines for clerks to send out absentee ballots. Another would require clerks to retain video footage of election night proceedings for 22 months. Evers also vetoed several election-related bills, including one that would change who could be declared indefinitely confined and another that would have lowered the cost of registered voting lists. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know what's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Don't change the station, but do watch out for deer, would ya? You know, they're running around all willy-nilly. It is the Krebscast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Lows level off around 23 tonight under partly cloudy skies. Winds out of the south around 5 miles per hour. Sunny skies and calm tomorrow. Highs around 46. Partly cloudy skies tomorrow night. Lows dip down to about 32. 1 to 2 inches of snow Saturday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley. Right now, 37.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Bug Tussle has been your trusted rural internet provider since 2003. Based in Wisconsin and backed by local support, Bug Tussle brings high-speed internet where others can't or won't. At an honest price, without any contracts or data caps, Bug Tussle has the plan that's right for you. Get connected with Bug Tussle today for internet, cellular, and entertainment by calling 877-227-0924. That's 877-227-0924. Or visit btussle.com.
Plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Sawyer County's choice for news, talk, and sports. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. I'm here now with Allison Ronning of Solfeggio Care Consultation and End-of-Life Doula Services. Allison provides end-of-life doula services where she honors her clients' wishes and provides comfort and guidance during some of the most challenging times. Welcome, Allison.
Thank you.
Yeah, Allison, my first question for you that I'm dying to ask, no pun intended, is what led you to this work?
Great question. Well, I was a therapist for almost 16 years prior to this. And so getting really comfortable with sitting with people in some of their deepest, darkest, most personal moments, a lot of emotions, such an array of emotions, and being able to sit with them, validate those emotions, move through those with them to be able to get to the other side. So that was my first foundation. Last year, I lost both my parents. They both passed away, my mom in March and my dad in November. So walking them through that, feeling very alone, feeling like I didn't have a whole lot of support, feeling like I was just in unknown territory. I learned a lot about what I needed and what I didn't get. And I gathered all of my experiences up and thought to myself, I can help people moving forward, feel more supported, more educated, not so afraid, whether it's the patient or their family, to really feel like we can do this because we've got each other and we've got a whole host of support.
Well, I am so sorry for your loss. I can't even imagine.
Thank you.
But this seems like an extremely valuable service. I read on the National End of Life Doula Alliance, they said there was nearly 1,300 death doula members across the country. They didn't have a date attached to that, but they did say that in 2019, there were only around 260. So can you tell me more about how this fairly new type of healthcare profession came to be?
Well, I'd like to point out the fact that we've been taking care of our loved ones at the end of their lives since the beginning of time.
Ever, sure.
And forever. And so when that medical model and new research and new studies came into play, some of that very personal, connective time with our loved ones when they're dying was kind of removed from our hands. People are dying a lot more often in hospitals when they'd really prefer to be dying in their own homes, surrounded by their families and with the things that they know and love. And so what I'm doing is, and what we're doing as end-of-life doulas, is really putting that sacred time with one another back in the hands of families and their loved ones. So I venture to say it's been going on for a really long time. It dropped down a little bit because of medical research and hospitals kind of coming about, but
I think it's still really important for people to learn how to care for their loved ones throughout the entire process.
Absolutely. And at what point would it be appropriate to bring in an end-of-life doula?
That's a really great question. People ask me that all the time. They're like, well, end of life, does that mean like they're going to die tomorrow? That's the end, right? And I'm like, whoa, we can do so much amazing work with people if we can get a referral way ahead of time. You know, when somebody gets their diagnosis of a terminal illness, that's a great time to be able to slow down, take a breath, and think about the support you need, and think about, if you know about us, hey, end-of-life doulas are there from start to finish. So I like to say as soon as possible, connect with an end-of-life doula in your community, because I think about the shock phase when somebody gets a terminal diagnosis. That is like their world crumbling around them, what they thought they knew about who they were, what their life was going to look like. And so when we think about an end-of-life doula being able to be there and sit with people and their families in this new territory that they just didn't know was ever going to be kind of a thing for them, that can be powerful to sit and earn that trust and create that safe space for people to be able to, we're going to move forward with this, whatever this looks like, but we're going to do it together. After that shock phase, there's a phase where people can really start to conserve their energy, and they've got a lot of space to do legacy projects, writing down stories, doing audio recordings of stories, going through pictures, making collages. There's just so much stuff that in that phase of end of life that people can harness and connect with their loved ones. And so if you have an end of life doula there saying, you know, do you want help writing your eulogy? Do you want help writing your obituary? It can be your voice coming through, and I just can help you write it down, and we can get it ready and get it done for you. When they have that energy and that headspace to be able to do that powerful work, it can really add to that acceptance and peace of that end of life. And then, yeah. You know, as people transition into more of the act of dying, that's another sacred, sensitive space for patients and families where it can be full of the unknown, fear, maybe regret, sadness. There's just so many feelings that people go through at the end of life that if you have someone there to bridge the gaps where maybe palliative care, hospice care can't do some of the social, emotional, spiritual things that an end-of-life doula can do because we've got the time. That's an important thing that also adds to that acceptance and that peace and be able to peacefully let go.
That makes a ton of sense. And, you know, I just have a bazillion and one thoughts running through my head that I didn't even know existed until right now. So I am Liza Helen Brand. I'm the host of The Empowered Caregiver, and I am talking with Allison Ronnie of Solfego Care Consultation and End of Life Doula Services. So, you know, I think despite people's best intentions, I'm sure not all things get handled well. You know, and since I was talking with my last guest, Dr. Brittany Lamb, about how people can be prepared to handle emergency medical situations with a loved one, I just wanted to ask, what can family members do to make this extremely painful time less difficult? I mean, do you have just some general tips or advice?
Absolutely. To be able to have support to be as authentic and open and honest with each other as possible, it can be so, so helpful. I think about a hallmark of being able to have a peaceful ending is to be able to give forgiveness and get forgiveness. So if people can get in that space where they can say to each other, I know we hurt each other, or you hurt me, but I love you so much, and I don't want you to go holding on to that kind of energy. I forgive you and I love you. Not everybody gets there. right? And sometimes the end of life is not peaceful, and there's maybe some lack of acceptance. But if people can move towards that space to be really honest with, I'm sad, I'm scared, I'm hurting right now, and to be able just to share that with each other, that can be really helpful for somebody to be able to let go and move on. And advocate for yourselves and for your loved one who is dying. Sometimes that's scary. Should I pipe up? Should I say something? I'm kind of nervous to say something. If you're able to have a support person like an end-of-life doula there cheering you on and say, hey, you can ask these things. You absolutely can have these concerns and voice them. That's important because there are no do-overs. So if you're able to at least say, we asked, we brought it up because it was important to us, that can give people a peace of mind that we did everything we could. We loved our person as much as we possibly could, and we advocated for ourselves and for them.
Well, those sound like some amazing, deep, personal conversations. And to me, mm-hmm. I could just feel a sense of closure with it, with it. Mm-hmm. And like you said, the legacy, what a way to be able to to remember your loved one, and what a way for your loved one to know how you feel and think too, so that the unsaids are said. Mm-hmm. And if I got that correct, you are able through your services to mm-hmm. navigate or facilitate some of those harder conversations.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's really about being delicate and curious and thoughtful, where just because I have thoughts and feelings and, some info I'd love to give, it's not always the right time. And so to just really be able to sit back with gentleness and true curiosity and caring, then I can maybe start to facilitate a little bit of those conversations.
Well, what about this? It would be lovely to end on a warm, loving kumbaya note. But some people have some real issues. I mean, some real Absolutely. Disagreements, some real things mm-hmm. dividing them. Is that something that you can tackle, or how do you get to a place where you can both be at peace?
And you're absolutely right. It's not like the movies where just like people leave in peace and families figure out their conflict within like a half hour, right? It's just not always like that. And so to be able to say, I wonder what it would be like if we had this conversation outside of the room. People can fight over their loved one who's laying here dying in their bed. It's such a so kindly put it out there. I wonder what we could do to move this conversation out of here, because this space is really in need of peace. It's in need of some quiet. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Another thing is that not all patients go in peace. They have unresolved issues. I think about veterans at the end of life. Some veterans really struggle with post-traumatic stress disorder, continued feelings that are just so intense and strong that not everybody will find peace. What I like to do, what I like to share with family, is to own that and say, you weren't able to find the peace you wanted. And I acknowledge that and I validate that. What I can do for you is speak your name when you're gone, and I can try and do good in your name to help you find that peace. And sometimes that's all we can do, is what we can do moving forward to help bring that person peace by honoring them, celebrating their life, doing good deeds in their name to help that peace be fulfilled, even when they're not here anymore.
Well, you had mentioned earlier about starting this process, and some people don't have the opportunity to even go through this process. But I did see on the, I believe it was the International Doula Service website, I can't remember exactly, that you can work with doulas after death as well. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? And what does that look like?
That's true. When I think about like immediately after someone has died, doulas, if they're comfortable, can and if families are comfortable, can provide aftercare services when it comes to cleaning the body, dressing the body of their loved one, helping prepare them for transport to whoever that might be, or helping move them to a different room in the home if they're going to do an at-home celebration or a wake. So being able to help with that immediate need is there. But also, I think it's really important to be able to do bereavement care, to be able to keep checking in on people, and not just, you know, 3 months after, because you might be able to see a person at 3 months, but 6 months, 9 months, you can see a very different person.
Absolutely. You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am speaking with Allison Ronnie of Solfego Care Consultation and End-of-Life Doula Services. When we come back, we will talk more about how to make a peaceful and loving transition with your loved ones.
Is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Snow brings thoughts of ways to stay busy in Wisconsin during the winter. And if you anticipate hitting the slopes, are you surprised to learn there are more than 36 ski resorts across the state? It ranges from Wilmot Mountain, which opened in 1938 in Kenosha County, to Mount La Crosse Ski Area, with one of the longest runs in Wisconsin. Granite Peak offers 58 runs outside Wausau, and Wild Mountain Ski Area and its 7 lifts near Hayward. Now, do you know which of those resorts sits on the highest slope? The answer coming up. Recreational skiing started in the Midwest. The Lost Ski Areas Project reports the first documentation of actual downhill skiers happened in Beloit in 1841. So which resort sits on the highest slope today? It's Granite Peak near Wausau and boasts 400 acres at a 700-foot vertical drop. The fun and history of skiing is a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. I'm here now with Allison Ronning of Solfego Care Consultation and End-of-Life Doula Services. Allison provides end-of-life doula services where she honors her clients' wishes and provides comfort and guidance during some of the most challenging times. Okay, so Allison, I confess during commercial that I am just like trying to hold it together right now. I had no idea all these emotions and ranges of emotions and things I never thought that I would think of are coming to mind. So I just need to take a minute to clear my head. And so this is how I do it. Your name, the company name is Solfego, right? Okay.
Solfeggio.
Yeah. See, there we practiced this so many times. So if I can just get back to my happy space, we can continue on. So I have Allison Ronning from Solfeggio Care Consultation and End-of-Life Doula Services. Actually, that means something that you explained to me earlier. Can you let listeners know where the name came from?
Yes. So Solfeggio frequencies, it's spelled S-O-L-F-E-G-G-I-O. And they're a specific kind of frequencies that when listened to, they're tones. It's not like lyrical music, but they're tones, and certain tones, some of the higher ones, can lead to feelings of increased calm, increased balance, feeling more open to your emotions, and more open to different experiences. So when I listen to them personally, I get those feelings. I get that sense of calm and grounding and balance. And so I thought, what a great tool to be able to use with the people I work with, even as a background sounds, to be able to kind of balance out a room, get that energy kind of flowing in a really positive direction. And so I thought, you know, I work with the soul. I work with not just the person's body, but I work with their soul too. So I did a little play on words. So solfeggio, I spell it S-O-U-L-F-E-G-G-I-O, because I really think it's important to put that soul of the person in the center of the room. So that's where I came up with it.
I love it. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
So I was on the International End of Life Doula Association website, and there were two things in the long list of services that you provide that really stuck out to me, because like I had shared, there's just so much right now that I've not thought about before ever. And one was, and I know you spoke to these a little bit earlier, but one was the meaning of the dying person's life legacy. What does that look like?
You know, that's an amazing space to be in with a person when it's the person who is at their end of life, to be able to say, tell me about your life. Tell me about how you brought meaning to the world, how you brought meaning to other people, how they brought meaning to you. And you just see people's eyes light up and they love to share those stories. And that's another piece of that acceptance and that being able to let go in a more peaceful manner, is to be able to do that life review, share those stories, record those stories, make sure they live on long before we're gone. To be able to say, I was here and I did something meaningful. I had a purpose. I had passion for something. And this is why I want to tell you, because it's been so important to me. Mm. So to be able to share those stories and keep that legacy and that storytelling going, it decreases people's fear of missing out. I'm going to miss out on so much. I'm going to miss out on birthdays and graduation. What if people forget about me? If they have those archives, those legacy projects to be able to go back and read or listen to, and to talk about, this is how I want to be remembered. You know, maybe on the anniversary of my death, I want you to go out, have a barbecue in my name, do these things in remembrance of me. Let me keep living on through what you get to keep doing. Those are the kinds of legacy projects that can be so transformational for people at the end of their life.
I love that. And I think you answered my next question, unless there's anything else that you wanted to do, that you wanted to expand on it. And that was the second thing that I saw on the website that really caught my eye, was to incorporate new traditions or rituals to mark special moments. Again, what does that look like? Or can you give examples of what people are wanting?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think about, you know, there's services out there that if you and your family would like to set it up, you are able to write a special message or have a special message written on a card for, let's say, your grandkids for the next 10 years of their lives. So every year, your grandkid gets to get a birthday card from you saying, you know, I love you so much. Love grandma or grandpa, and it decreases that fear of missing out, and it makes sure that you are still in the room for that youngster and you get to still be part of things. Not everybody chooses to have a funeral or a celebration of life, but maybe it's about making their favorite baked good. You know, every year on my mom's birthday, we're going to bake a carrot cake because it was her favorite. She doesn't get to enjoy it with us, but her energy, her spirit's in that room when we're baking it and when we're enjoying it together as a family. Those are some really personal things that if you're able to have those conversations with your loved ones, we can make that happen.
Well, you know, I love that you say that. And of course, this whole time I'm thinking about mine, right? What am I going to do?
Yeah.
And the only thing I could come up with is I'm going to have this list, like this nagging mom list of all the things that I want you to do to celebrate me on, you know, whatever day it is that I choose. And then what my kids have to do is they have to come together and all they have to do is read this list. Mm-hmm. Mom, you want us to do it? Dun, 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 dun. Nope, not going to happen. You know, and then they can go about their way. Cause I have a feeling like that's kind of about as good as it's going to get for me. I don't know, but I just want
to, you know what? There's no perfect way to do it. It's your way and your wishes, and to be able to at least share those with your family members so they can go out and hopefully connect with you in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, is there anything else in these last few moments that I'm missing that you really want to share? You know what we need to do is we need to let people know how they can find you.
Absolutely. So I do have a Facebook page. The keyword is Solfeggio. So S-O-U-L-F-E-G-G-I-O. My picture will pop up right there. I give a lot of my own personal experiences. I find that that's one of the best ways to connect with people is not just give information that I might find somewhere, but really say, hey, this happened to me and this is my emotional experience with it. I know how tough it was for me and I don't want it to be as tough for you as it was for me. So I want you to have support. So to be able just to share a lot of vulnerability and authenticity with people has been a great way to connect.
Well, I'll make sure that I put that up on my Facebook too. So people that are watching listening can find out where they can find you and how they can connect and how they can take part of your amazing services that you offer. You provide great services to society. So needed.
From Birchwood to Poplar, this is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH, your home for news, talk, and sports. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Bud Tussle has been your trusted rural internet provider since 2003. Based in Wisconsin and backed by local support, Bud Tussle brings high-speed internet where others can't or won't. At an honest price, without any contracts or data caps, Bud Tussle has the plan that's right for you. Get connected with Bud Tussle today for internet, cellular, and entertainment by calling 877-227-0924. That's 877-227-0924. Or visit btussle.com.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.